You think you're in love with this person who accepts you for you, but you barely accept yourself for yourself. And looking back, it really wasn't love. It was just two people who were unhappy in their lives and in their marriages, trying to make something happen or make it magical.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Today's episode, we are getting raw and real. You are going to want to stay through the end. I am so thankful to have Shilpa Kacho on the show today. Shilpa shares with us some very vulnerable stuff that she went through. We're going to be talking about her divorce from her first husband, the infidelity that happened on her part during the marriage. She shares some of the underlying mental and emotional issues that she was experiencing during that phase of her life. And we'll learn how going through all of that ultimately led her to where she's at today, living a really happy, thriving, and authentic life. Shilpa is remarried now to her husband, Isaac. They have a pretty crazy backstory on how they met, which she does share that in today's episode. They are currently based out of Dallas and are new parents to their newborn daughter, and they share their journey online as a couple on how they cultivate a joyful and thriving relationship, and now through parenthood as well. We know these topics are highly stigmatized, especially in our South Asian community, and so I really appreciate Shilpa coming on and sharing her journey and story so candidly. Here's our conversation. Hi, Shilpa. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello, Julie. I'm so excited to be here.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Koshi. Or Kacho.
Kacho.
Yeah, Kacho. It's Isaac's last name. So it's like just Macho, but with a C.
And your last name, your maiden name is Koshi, so you're Malayali?
Yes.
Got it. Okay, so today we are talking about dating after divorce. Dun, 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 dun. Mm-hmm. We know that is a topic that comes with a lot of stigma within our community, especially our brown community. And so, Shilpa, I'm really excited to have you on our podcast today. So maybe let's just start off by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and intro yourself to our audience just so that we know who you are.
Yes. So I started my social media career, I guess you could say, as a makeup artist. And I kind of started sharing my work on there. And then as I went through my divorce, my life just unraveled. I unraveled as a human being. I was very lost and broken and just kind of confused about who I was or where, you know. Who I wanted to be. I pretty much started life over again. I moved out to LA. I was based in Texas at that time. I moved out to LA, started over. And as I was going through stuff, I started sharing my journey. I had people starting to message me saying like, oh my God, I'm going through something similar. And like, thank you so much for posting this. And I was like, oh my God, clearly I need to be doing more of this. People really resonate with it. And one thing I struggled with was not having someone that looked like me who was also going through something very similar. I felt very isolated during that time after my divorce. It was just really hard to be going through a divorce in community, especially my community, where people like to choose sides and like someone has to be the bad guy. And me growing up wanting to people please and be accepted by everyone, that was extremely hard for me to do. So I share my journey online right now because I want people to know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
They don't have to feel isolated in what they're going through, pretty much. Like other people are going through the same thing.
Today's episode is sponsored by Uzzer PR. Uzzer PR is a public relations and digital marketing agency founded by Amber Sabri. Her agency is dedicated to amplifying female founders, minority-owned brands, and South Asian-owned brands through the power of PR. Whether you're looking to build your founder presence, increase brand exposure in traditional media, or build relationships with influencers through events and collaborations, Amber and her team are dedicated to uplifting you. In industries dominated by the majority, Uzzer PR is here to empower the minority. Check out www.uzzerpr.com. That's AZHARPR.com. And now back to our episode. So with your first marriage, how did you meet your first husband? How old were you when you got married that first time? And what were all, you know, the events that ultimately led to the divorce?
I was 20 when I met him. I had just moved to Texas, I think like a year after I met him. So we were dating. Like, we were dated for like 5 years before we got married. I believe I was the one who probably put the pressure of getting married, because I was like, okay, like, I'm finishing my master's. This is the next step.
Right, the timeline.
Yeah, the timeline, right? This idea of a timeline that our freaking parents and community just ingrained in us. Like, this is what you do. Get your education, get married, have kids, end of life, right? That was what was in my mind, too. I saw my sister do the same thing. She had finished school, got married, kids, all that. And I looked up to her at that time, and I looked up to other people in my community who were doing that. Those were the successful people, right? So I was like, okay, let's get married. That's the next step. And we probably didn't start fighting until we got engaged, actually. So, which was so funny. I think I really saw the differences at that time, or maybe it was, they were always there, uh-huh. But I guess there was more pressure when I was engaged, right? Like, oh my God, like, this is happening, and we haven't like really resolved this issue, or is this really going to work? So probably a few months before we were actually married, I knew I didn't want to get married. But by that time, I was too afraid.
You're so far in the process.
Yes. Invites are out. Deposits are put down. Everyone knows. Like, oh, shit, I can't end it now. This is going to be embarrassing for everybody, including myself. But I just wasted all this money, and all this shit's on your head. But oh my God, a few years later, you're going through it anyway, right? If you don't feel it at that time, you're definitely going to feel it a few years later, and it's worse. So people are going to talk about you either way. So that doesn't matter. So we went through it. And it's not like we did have good times. He's a good person. I'm a good person. We had good times together. We had good memories together. But there was just always conflict. And for myself, like, we were fighting the day of our wedding. And we fought the day after our wedding. And it was just...
So when you say the fighting started when you guys got engaged, was that because you started to have more serious discussions and conversations about your future together?
So I think, if I'm being honest, I definitely saw the differences in values. Mm-hmm. He was more traditional than I was, even though he was born growing up here and I wasn't, but I was not as traditional when it came down to like as silly things as like what we're going to wear, what my bridesmaids are going to wear, or where we were even going to have the wedding. I wanted a destination wedding. He was too afraid to disappoint his parents, where I was like, I don't care what my parents say. I want a destination wedding. I'm paying for it. I'm going to have one, you know? Whereas he wanted to make his parents happy, right? So there was a lot of like things that even throughout the marriage that I wasn't necessarily able to like share with his parents because he was afraid of their reaction. He was essentially an extension of my family. So what I grew up with is what I chose to marry at that time.
Right.
So he was very much judgmental towards my actions and wasn't really accepting of me as a whole. And even through, I didn't even know who I was completely at that time yet either. I was in my early 20s. mid-20s by the time we got married. And honestly, like in your 20s, you don't really know who you are.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah. And I'm only really figuring that out in my 30s, in my mid to late 30s now, right? And I'm still changing. So it's still, like, I just became a new mom. So I'm still figuring it out. But in my 20s, I'm looking back, I'm like, I was a freaking baby. And it's amazing that people get married in their 20s and still make it work. And that's amazing that you find partners that you can grow with, but it is very difficult to do that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you started noticing, you know, these shifts and changes, like even before you guys got married. Did you ever seek out counseling or therapy, or were you, you know, did you guys seek out those treatment options to see if you could work on improving the marriage at the time?
I don't know why that never came up. And it's so crazy because we should have. As we were engaged, we totally should have. So like the only option that was, you know, forced upon us at that time was what premarital counseling with the Uchin or the priest at his church. And that was literally maybe one session of 1 hour where he's asking questions about money or like some other, like I got nothing out of it. Nothing out of it. I wish that was actually something that people like advised me about, is like get into therapy. while you're freaking dating, before you even get engaged, to get into therapy. And it doesn't matter if you have quote unquote problems or not, everyone can benefit from therapy. There are always issues. There's no perfect relationship. There are always issues and there are always communication issues. And even just learning how to deal with that or head on is going to be beneficial for your marriage.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's interesting. Those premarital sessions, what it's called, like pre-Cana or something like that you go through with the church. It's interesting that it happens after you're already engaged, because I almost feel like at that point it's too late. Like those are kinds of conversations and discussions to have like while you're dating. Like my partner and I, we're not engaged, but we have talked about everything down to things like, if we have kids, what do we want their device and screen usage to look like? Like, you know, how do we think about them having social media? And even if that sounds like far-fetched to be talking about that, like I would rather have those discussions now than that be a point of contention on the road, you know, trying to figure it out then. But I also think back to your point of like 20s, at that early on in your life, because you're still figuring yourself out, you don't even know to ask those questions, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't have enough life experience under your belt to know that like these are things that you need to talk about, you know?
100%. I mean, in my 20s, I would have not cared about any of that crap.
Right.
Yeah. The important things and asking questions about values and how to spend money and all that. Like, I wouldn't have been able to answer those questions myself.
Right.
Let alone have a conversation with someone else about the future, about how to deal with that. And, you know, even touching on that is that we can have these conversations now and our answers might change as life happens, and being able to like know that we can both be flexible with that, and would that be okay for both partners, right?
Yeah. How long were you guys married for?
So we were married for 5 years. Honestly, the whole time, like I said, we had really good times, but there was always something inside of me that felt there was like a big void. And one thing I wanted to touch on, that's what I was going to say, was one thing I didn't do for myself was, so I lived with my parents, got married, and then lived with my ex. So I never lived on my own, and I never had that time to discover and explore who I am without the pressure of someone else's expectations. So that's really hard when you live with your parents and you're under their roof and under their rules. And then you get married or with their spouse and you're essentially under the rules that you guys create together, and you don't have that time to explore on your own. And that's another piece of advice that I give to someone in their 20s, is to go live on your own, experience life, and 100%. Learn how to be an adult, pay your own bills.
Yeah. There is so much growth that happens in the absence of home when you're away from your family, you're away from comfort and everything that you know. So there was some infidelity that happened in your first marriage. And first of all, I want to acknowledge, and I know this is like not an easy subject to talk about, so thank you for being open to sharing, you know, how this affected your life. But infidelity is, I think, a lot more common than most people probably think. The stats that I was reading show like somewhere between 20 to 40% of married couples are affected by infidelity, even in the brown community. It's just that it's so hush-hush with us. I personally know a handful of married couples that have been affected by infidelity. And I think personally, like my first glimpse into realizing how common infidelity is was in my 20s, when I was off on my own and I would get hit on multiple times by married men who know that I know they're married. And, you know, if it wasn't for me being like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? If I allowed it, like something more would have happened. And I didn't. But this was like people that I knew from church environments, work environments, business trips. And so that was kind of like my first glimpse of, oh, shit, this thing, this infidelity, you know, is a lot more common than we think. So when you were going through all of this in your first marriage, like what was going on in your headspace that culminated to the affair starting? Like, what do you think were some of those underlying mental and emotional things that were impacting you at the time that ultimately led to the affair?
So I think it was a buildup of a lot of things. First of all, I grew extremely insecure, never worked on mental health issues, self-love journey, like none of that. Like, I should have been going to therapy the whole time, right? You know? And the thing is, I was trying to seek approval and love and acceptance from not myself. I was trying to look for it outside of that. And I honestly, if I really look back, I was in a tough situation. I felt stuck in that marriage and I didn't know what to do with that heaviness. I was dealing with deep depression during that marriage and I didn't know how to get out of it. And I knew I kept like imagining a different life for myself and it wasn't what I was living with my ex. And I was looking for an escape. I didn't know how to handle this tough situation. You know, I was probably essentially trying to blow up my life so I can finally get out of it. I think we subconsciously do things. And I was always the type of person like, I would never cheat. Like, that's something I would never do. And, you know, and that's why it's so easy for people to judge. Like, I've 100% judged people prior to doing what I did. 100% judge people for cheating. And I think it's so easy to judge until you're in a specific situation. Because trust me, like you said, it is way more common than you think it is.
Yeah.
And I know from personal stories and like my ex would tell me all the time his friends would be doing that to their wife.
Yeah.
Easily on trips, on whatever. And they justify it too. So, and it's heartbreaking for me to like hear that because I knew about that, you know, his community. And then I also know about that, like other people in church communities. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're brown, white, black, whatever. Everyone's freaking doing it. And it's a problem. It's a huge problem. So the judgment aspect of it, it really sucks. But it's a low level act trying to get out of something that you don't know how to handle, right? So in our community, we aren't taught how to deal with tough emotions or our struggles in general. Like people just brush things under the rug. And then that is a problem. We don't know how to communicate with others. We don't know how to take away shame from topics. Like everything, like you said, is hush hush. It doesn't have to be about a divorce or cheating or anything of that. It's like, what are the underlying issues in the first place that made you act out in that way, right?
Right.
So for a lot of these people that got married in their 20s who are cheating, a lot of them got married for the same reasons I did. It's just the next step. Oh, I guess I have to do this. This is what people expect of me. Some of them didn't want to get married to the partners that they chose to get married to, but like, oh, I guess she'll make a good wife or he'll make a good, or, you know, a good partner. This is the right thing to do. My parents would be happy with this. Like, so like things like that, being able to like give permission to explore yourself and live outside the box or the parameters that our community and our society allow us, right? Being accepting of ourselves and learning to love ourselves for who we are instead of trying to fit into the box and fit into our community. So I think that's where it all stemmed from. And I didn't realize that at that point, you think you're in love with this person who accepts you for you, but you barely accept yourself for yourself. And looking back, it really wasn't love. It was just two people who were unhappy in their lives and in their marriages, trying to make something happen or make it magical, or it was a bunch of crap.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And another statistic, it's a low percentage of people who actually make it work while cheating. Like if they met through infidelity, it's a really low statistic that they actually work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting all that you mentioned. Like I definitely think unresolved trauma can manifest deeply in so many ways. You know, when you have self-esteem issues, are you still working through people pleasing, not wanting to disappoint your family? On top of all the shit and the emotional guilt that our families will put on us, like all of that can make it so easy for people to constantly live this life that's not your own. And you can only do that for so long. You know, you can only pretend for so long before all that just like catches up with you and smacks you in the face. It's like kind of like a storm waiting to happen.
Exactly. And I looked around, like, and like you said, I was going out at the time to seeing people in their 50s still cheating on their spouses, both men and women. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I'm like, I do not want to be that person.
Right.
So that's just like, I have to leave. For me to live authentically to myself and honor myself and to be the person that I envision myself to be, which is an honest person, a good person, is to stop living this life.
Right. Did your ex-husband eventually find out about the affair?
Yeah, he did. I never like truly gave details or like really, really confirmed it, but he knew.
Yeah. How did you break that cycle in your head? You know, like, were you afraid of cheating again in the relationships after that first marriage or even in your marriage now? Like, Do you have those fears of possibly falling back into that habit? And how do you kind of work through that?
Yes, that's a really great question. Sorry, one second.
No, go for it.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So during the time of my divorce, before I actually left, I started seeing a therapist, and I love this therapist to death. He taught me how to save my own life, which is incredible. And I kept a relationship with him even after I moved. And he, you know, one of the fears that came up for me when Isaac and I started dating was, because it was long distance too, right? I didn't know how to trust myself yet. And I also didn't forgive myself for cheating in the first place. So I was still struggling with all those emotions. And I'm like, how do I make this work? Will I cheat again? I'm so scared, right? Like, all my therapist, he literally just told me, this will probably be burned in my brain for the rest of my life, is you can't control what you're going to do 10 years from now or 5 years from now or whatever it is. But all you have control over is when you wake up in the morning, you ask yourself, what kind of person do I want to be today? And that is all you have control over that day. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can do that. It doesn't feel as overwhelming. And that was when we just started dating. And now, what, 5 years later, I'm like, oh, hell no, that's not even a question on my mind. Like, that's not even a fear for me, because I've really just grown exponentially from that point. I've forgiven myself for the cheating. I can talk about it out loud. I'm not embarrassed or ashamed by it anymore. It's just, it is what it is. And, you know, God and I have talked that out. I don't need anyone else to judge me for it. Like, give me shit for it. They can do whatever they want. But I know people are dealing with their own struggles. And I think it's more beneficial to talk about it than not. And I'm madly in love with my husband. And we have a really strong relationship that this is hard to find anywhere else. And I was cheating for other reasons, right? It's not just because someone's good looking and they're hot and I want to like hook up with them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, infidelity in most situations, I'm not saying infidelity is right or justified in any way, but I do think in most situations, infidelity happens because there's a foundation that's already broken. And like, people are not cheating because they're happy with themselves or they're happy in a fulfilled relationship. Like, there's so much that's like broken at the foundation level.
100%.
When you shared with your family about your divorce, how did they react to it?
Yeah, they were not happy. It was probably one of the toughest times I've ever experienced, because I was always one of the golden children, right? Like, there was two of my siblings didn't do well in school, whatever, always got shit, always got in trouble. And the other two, which I was one of them, was we did well in school. Like, I was probably even better than the other one, because she was like dating some other dude or whatever. Like, I hid all my shit well is what I did until that point. So like, I did one school, I got married, I like, you know, married the Indian Malayali guy and all that. So I was the golden child until that point, at least in my mind. And my siblings, I think at that point, I realized that they were a lot more traditional than I expected them to be. And it was really hard, because that was probably the first time in my life that I didn't have the support of my family during one of the hardest times in my life. I've chosen to forgive everybody, and hopefully they've chosen to forgive me as well, like move on from it. But it was definitely super, super hard. They were not about it because they loved my ex. He was in their life for like 10 years. So understandably so, right? Like, he's family for them too. And they thought I had just gone crazy. And I was like, well, I was kind of going crazy the whole time, but no one knew about it. So it was hard, but it had to happen that way for me. I came out a lot stronger for it.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you kind of manage your healing journey post-divorce? You know, like, what were the steps that you took to heal and move forward? I know you mentioned therapy, but I don't know if there's anything else that you want to add or expound on.
Yeah, therapy for sure. And honestly, moving out of the place that made me feel comfortable. At that point, Texas, I had been there for like 10 years or something like that. And so I was home, right? But I knew I wanted to leave and start from scratch. So I moved somewhere. I didn't really know anybody.
Was that when you moved to LA?
Yeah. So I moved to LA then. I lived with strangers and
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was so crazy. So I started doing things, just trying things. If I had an interest for something or like, oh, that sounds cool, or like, that looks cool, I just did it. So then I figured out, that's for me, that's not for me, you know? And that's like, the self-exploration phase was so important. and surrounding yourself with also other people who accept you for you. So I didn't have my family at that time, right? Some friends actually dropped off as well because they were so attached to the marriage and, you know, my ex, I guess. But I like met other women, or like I was already friends with other women who were going through similar situations at the same time. So they were in it with me. And then I had like two other really good friends who, even if they weren't going through the same situation, they stuck it out with me. So having that community is super helpful, but definitely therapy is probably the biggest thing I can recommend. And also, if you're a believer in this, I mean, I know it's still a little bit newer to some people, but life coaching is huge too. And like going on, I traveled a ton as well. So I traveled solo during my marriage as well, but like I really did it a ton while I was divorced. And that was huge for me too. Travel is such a big passion of mine. Uh-huh. But doing it alone is uncomfortable, but also magical. Like so many, you learn so much about yourself and your strengths.
Totally.
It's really cool.
Amazing. I love it. So therapy, life coaching, solo travel, you move to new environments. After your divorce, did you know you wanted to find love and get married again? Like, was there ever any kind of aversion toward the idea of marriage that you had kind of built up in your head?
Yeah. So there was a point where I was like, oh, maybe I'm not meant for marriage. I'm not marriage material, right? Like maybe I like too many people, or like, I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I was definitely at some point I was like that. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'm polyamorous. Maybe I like multiple people. And it's so funny because I'm not any of those things, uh-huh. But I met people who are in polyamorous relationships, which blew up in their faces. So like, I just had like these experiences, or like people who might've had those experiences come and tell me their story. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's not for me. But at the heart of it all, I would always go back to this idea of a person and building this life with that person. And so weird, but I started like making a list of all the things I wanted and like writing letters to this person that I didn't know who they were, but imagine that he was out there somewhere, and curious about who he was and what he was doing and things like that. So I definitely realized that I didn't want to be in a relationship and get married again.
Yeah. And what was dating like post-divorce? Like, how long did you wait till after your divorce was finalized before you put yourself back out there to date and meet people?
I didn't wait very long. So I actually initially, though, was like, I don't want anything serious. Let's just have fun, because I just got out of something. So I'm not looking for anything serious. So initially, that's what I was doing. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of lame. Like, that's not for me either. So,
and at this point of your life, you're 30, because you said you got married at 25, and then, okay.
Yeah. So I was like 31 or, yeah. And then like I started going on dates, like getting on apps. You know, one piece of advice I would give to women who are at this phase, especially if they didn't really date as adults, like this is my first time navigating dating as an adult. Like in my 20s, it's like, oh, he's cute. Okay, like cool. Let's like, we're boyfriend and girlfriend, like type of thing. But I never knew how to date. And so I was learning everything on my own. One piece of advice is like, especially if you don't know what you like or who you like or whatever it is, I think it's recommended that you date guys that you don't think you would necessarily like. So you learn what you do like, what you don't like, what you want. And like date, honestly, I think it's okay to date the time. Like go on dates. You know, that's how you learn about what you really want. And you get clarity on what you really want for yourself. And so I did that, and some ended badly, some were dramatic, some were fine. Like it was kind of all over the place, but yeah, it was fun. Like thinking about it, I'm so glad I did it. I'm so glad I went on a ton of dates before actually meeting Isaac.
Yeah, I always tell my younger cousins and people younger than me to just go date, like get to know different types of people, because that is going to give you a better sense of yourself and what you actually want in a partner, you know, like what's important to you, what you're willing to tolerate, what you're not willing to tolerate. Don't just agree to marry the first person, you know, like I think for me personally, every person that I've dated has only given me a better sense of what I actually want. And I also feel that like every person I've got to know or every relationship has gotten me closer to the person that was meant for me.
100%. Like seeing them as just stepping stones towards what your ultimate, you know, person is or whatever you believe in. But it doesn't have to be like every date has to work out. It has to be a relationship. No, that doesn't have to be the case, and it shouldn't be the case. You're just exploring people. You're just getting to know people, and I like seeing it like that and taking the pressure off.
Yeah. So your first husband was Malayali. After your divorce and you started dating again, did you have any kind of idea in your head of like, oh, I would like to marry another Malayali person? Okay. Or were you?
Oh. No, I was not dating Indian dudes and Malayali men especially. But I did like hook up with a few after, but never wanted to date them seriously. But yeah, so I knew, because I knew that before about myself. Like I knew, I never imagined myself with an Indian guy. I don't know what happened. He was a nice guy. Like he's a nice guy. I just, it's just funny. Like I've definitely heard that before. You just marry what you know. Mm-hmm. So whatever you grow up with is what you're going to look for.
Yeah.
And that is what I essentially did. But before him, before my ex, I was dating non-Indians, like a ton of non-Indians.
Got it.
Yeah.
And when you started dating again, what would be people's reactions when you told them that you were divorced? Like, did you get any kind of negative feedback or reactions of like, oh, like, sorry, I'm not interested anymore because of the fact that you're divorced? Like, did you experience any of that kind of stigma?
Surprisingly, no. But I think it's because I wasn't dating Indian people. So the only time my ex actually told me that because he was divorced, people were turning him down. And I'm like, that is so sad because you're actually a really good guy. And that's heartbreaking that people would hold that against you. I remember.
Wait, so sorry, your first husband was married before?
No. Like, we had talked post divorce and he told me that. And I said, that's so sad and disappointing on their part because, and obviously he was looking for Indian women because he.
Right.
He's more traditional in that sense. So
right. But when you say your ex, are you talking about like a previous boyfriend or the guy that you were married to the first
time? Oh, no, the guy I was married to.
Oh, okay. Got it. I'm just confused. So you guys were each other's first husband and wife, right? You were each other's first marriage. Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So let's fast forward to your life now. Tell the audience how you met your husband, Isaac, because I know it's kind of like a wild story.
Yeah. So I was actually dating kind of dating some dude, douchebag at that time. And I was like, I'm done being treated like shit. Like, I'm over this. And that night, like, I was supposed to actually meet up with that guy that night. And he bailed on me. I was like, oh, I'm so done with men. Like, I'm so done with him. And my roommate still wanted to go to these concerts in Santa Monica. So I was like, okay, fine, let's go. So went with her. Ended up there, like, towards the end of it. So we're like, okay, let's just hang out for a little bit longer since we came all the way out here. You know, everything takes at least 45 minutes to get to. And we walked into a bar and I saw this guy coming in and I was like, oh my God, who's that cute guy? And he wasn't making any eye contact or anything because, you know, like that's how it happens. Eye contact, okay, he's into me. So I didn't go up to him.
Smizing.
Yeah, exactly. And that didn't happen. So I was like, okay, I guess he's not interested. Anyway, so he's walking out the door. I'm sitting by the door. He's walking out with his friends. And he's like, hi. He just like turns around and says, hi, out of nowhere. And I was like, hi. And he's like, my friends are leaving, but can I hang out with you girls? And I was like, okay. And then he just like sat down, we had conversation, exchanged numbers, but he told me he's 23 years old and moving to South Korea because he's in the military. And I was like, okay, that is crazy. Nothing is going to happen here, but you're cute, whatever, right? He got my number.
You thought that he wasn't Mr. Right, but he was Mr. Right Now.
Exactly. Right? Hot. You know, we could have some fun this next week and that's about it. And then I had to like go back to Texas for work. And so the whole weekend we were texting and he was just different because usually guys, especially in LA, oh my gosh, they will be like super sexual right away. Right. And he was different. He wasn't like bringing up asking sexual questions or anything. We're talking about his family and some random stuff, whatever. I was like, okay, like this is cool. And then I'm flying back that Sunday and he's like, hey, I can pick you up from the airport. And you've lived in LA. No one freaking wants to drive to the airport. The airport is a shit. Yeah. So I'm like, that is my love language, is people picking me up from the airport.
Yeah.
For him to offer that, I was like, oh my God, he's so different. But still, he's 23 and moving out of the country. And we had our date the next day and we had so much fun. Like, we were open with each other right away. It was so easy to talk to each other. So, like, I was talking about my past marriage and infidelity. He had talked about past relationships and what had, you know, what he's been through. And we were just so open and it was a breath of fresh air. And we were like really non-judgmental towards each other, which was really different. And we just had so much fun. And I think what it was, though, was the lack of pressure, because we knew we were not going to end up together, or we thought we were going to end up together. We had zero pressure on how to act or if this is going to turn into a relationship. So we didn't care. So we were ourselves. We had a really good time. He kept like wanting to hang out all week. So he was there for a week and a half. He was there to visit family and friends, but he made an effort to see me every single day. And we like became really fast friends. We had such a good time together. And he left and I was devastated. I was so sad. But we kept talking every day since then for hours. And we were like, okay, like, I guess this is more than a friendship. Let's make this happen. And then 10 months later, we got married. So we eloped. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So you guys met in LA. You spend this magical week together. He goes off to Korea because he's in the military. And then 10 months later, you eloped and got married?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Where did you get married?
Yeah. So he was coming back to visit the States again. Like, he had like 2 weeks off. He was coming back to visit. And we had talked about going up north to do like Big Sur and all of that. Uh-huh. And that'd be such a pretty place. I said something like, that'd be such a pretty place to get married. And he said, let's do it. And I was like, okay. Okay. Are we really doing this? And then like we planned it, I think in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. And we got married in Big Sur. It was just his best friend, my best friend who married us. And we had our photographer, videographer, and it was perfect.
Wow. So you didn't tell anyone outside that circle?
So I wasn't going to. We weren't going to. But then one thing, I didn't want to deal with drama after getting married. So I said to myself, if I'm going to deal with drama, I'd rather do it beforehand rather than start off our marriage on this like foot of like shitty,
right,
whatever. And so I ended up having a conversation with my family and telling them a week or two before. And once again, they weren't happy. They didn't understand. I think it was less than 2 years since I had gotten divorced. Mm-hmm. So they also thought I was, once again, making another terrible decision for my life. They didn't understand. They didn't know him either. So for them, it was just, they had an intervention the week before I was supposed to get married. So it was pretty funny.
Yeah, with you or with the both of you? Or
it was with me. Yeah, so I had gone home again for work and I was home, and then they sat me down once again to have this like freaking family intervention about why, yeah, I shouldn't be this and why he's, you don't know him and blah blah blah, all this stuff. So
Did they try to attend the wedding? Did they try to invite themselves? Or
I remember my brother saying, you better have not invited anybody else. Meaning, like, if they're not invited, no one else better be going to this wedding.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, you know what it's like? Well, my friend was there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did take a lot of offense to it. And I understand. Like, I right, if I were in their shoes, I'd be confused and hurt and all that too.
So how did you know that Isaac was the one?
Him and I were just best friends. Like, we were really, really good friends. I've told him things that I've never told anybody, and he's done the same with me, and we felt really safe with each other. He kept his word. If he said he was going to do something, he would do it. And he was loyal. I was loyal to him, and we challenged each other too to grow in the relationship and do things that were outside of our comfort zone. And he also supported and pushed me to do things that might have scared me. He was more accepting of me being open and being myself. Whereas, you know, it's hard not to compare, but you do compare when you're, especially post-divorce, is, you know, with my ex, I always felt like I had to hide certain parts of myself. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Isaac, I didn't have to do that. And he accepted and loved me for all of it. And we just had a blast together. We had so much fun together, and our values very much aligned.
So I know you mentioned, like, with your parents and your family, it kind of started off on a rocky note. How would you describe the relationship that you have as a couple with your family now?
Oh yeah, it's totally, it's so different. Yeah. Like, he's such a family oriented person, and so for him, it's so nice for him to have family here. I didn't want to move back to Texas. He wanted to move back here, and he wanted to move here to be closer to my family, which is so funny because they were always so mean to him. So, like, that's the kind of guy he is, though, right? He is, like, this open-hearted, goofy dude who he wanted to win them over, and he did. And it's hard not to fall in love with him. He's just a good person, and he's fun to be around. And I think they see how we are together, how we complement each other really well. Like, they could see for themselves why we work. And right. He genuinely loves me and is. So I think they see how happy we are now.
I think what's really cool about watching your relationship through social media is, like, it's cool kind of seeing different ways of being able to preserve parts of your culture and tradition that are important to you, like, even while being in a racial marriage. Because I actually feel that sometimes that whole preserving culture can be more lost when you marry someone within the culture, because it's just kind of taken for granted. And so it's cool to see Isaac take such an active interest in, like, learning how to make chaya from your mom, or, like, you know, doing the Malayalam games or something like that, to, like, pick up Malayalam or to teach Malayalam to your daughter. And I think, like, that is cool, because there's plenty of brown guys who grew up here and would not take that same level of effort because of the fact that it's, like, taken for granted.
100%. I mean, with my ex, he was born, brought up here. He had traditional values, but he didn't know the language. He didn't care to wear the clothes. He didn't care about the culture really as much as Isaac does, which is so insane. And if anything, Isaac has made me want to dive deeper into my culture because he's so interested in it. He wants to make sure our daughter has it and grows up with it. And I feel the same way. And like you said, he asked my mom to, like, hey, I'm going to learn how to make this, or, like, learn how to make chai. He made chai for his coworkers the other day, right? He's the, like, non-Indian one, and they're all Indian, which is so funny.
Yeah.
So it's really cute to see. And it's really awesome to see, because I didn't know how much I did value it until seeing it through eyes. And, like, and it is taken for granted when you have two Indian people together sometimes.
Yeah. What are some things that you guys do to maintain a thriving and healthy relationship?
Therapy when we feel like we need it. So while I was pregnant, we were going through a rough patch, and I was like, we need to get into therapy. And not being embarrassed by that, and that doesn't mean you have an unhealthy relationship. It just means you freaking need help outside of what you're able to give, like what you both can give to each other. You need an outsider's perspective to kind of help give clarity on how you can improve this and get to a solution. So that making time, quality time for each other, and genuinely quality time, not just sitting and watching a movie or, like, being on our phones together, like talking, having real conversation about not just surface level things, or like what needs to get done, or what are we doing this weekend. It's actually things about life and things about how they're doing with their day to day, and like, what are they passionate about? What are they working towards? Things like that. And being supportive of each other. Having sex multiple times a week is important.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's one thing I just feel is lacking in our culture and community. I hear from so many women, or it's so many men who are unhappy with their sex life, with their wife or spouse or girlfriend or whatever it is. And I'm just like, well, why aren't you guys doing something about it? It needs to be talked about. It needs to be, once again, sex doesn't have to be a topic that you should be ashamed of. It's a very normal, healthy part of a relationship. And I just wish there wasn't so much embarrassment or shame around that topic.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think, like, it's so easy to fall into the rut of the day-to-day. So if you're not being really intentional about planning check-ins on to discuss the health of your relationship, planning date nights. Like there's someone I follow and she says that her and her husband literally have like on their calendar, like a date night to have sex because she's like, if it's not on our calendar, like it's just probably not going to happen when you think about the day to day, the jobs, the work, the careers, the kids, blah, 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 chores, etc. So I love that. Yeah. What do you think was the biggest lesson that you learned kind of going through your divorce and then coming out of it and just all that you went through like during that phase of your life?
Staying true to yourself is extremely important to happiness and quality of life. And that people will talk no matter what. No matter what you decide to do, people will always have something to say. So trying to live by the expectations or following the expectations of other people, like, it just doesn't make any sense. And especially when you realize what's happening behind closed doors in their lives, that the opinions of others really don't matter. Like, they just don't. And even when it comes down to parents, I love my parents to death. Are they perfect? Far from perfect. I couldn't see that as a child. You know, you grow up trying to worship your parents because that's what you're taught to do. But at the end of the day, they are human. So take people down from the pedestals that you have them on and realize at the end of the day, we're all on the same level. We're all trying to just figure out life and figure out happiness and what all that means to us. So be authentic to yourself and live and do what makes you happy. And that is, honestly, that is the only way that you're going to actually live a fulfilled life.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. I think especially with our parents, because they grew up in a completely different world. They grew up in a different generation. And I think the best thing for me that I learned is just kind of taking what they say and the advice that they give with a grain of salt. You know, most of the time I just kind of let it go through one ear and out the other, because at the end of the day, your parents aren't going to be around forever. And when they pass on, like, you're going to have to live this life of your own, and you want it to be one that's like yours, you know?
Absolutely. And then also, I mean, I might get a little bit of trouble for saying this, but even in their community and in their generation of people, there are plenty of people who are cheating and unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't come that often.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for coming on our podcast today. I love chatting with you. Thank you for like sharing that you went through, like love and loss. You slayed your dragons and now you're here happy and thriving. I love it. Where can people connect with you?
Yeah, on Instagram, we're just at Isaac_Shilpa, on TikTok as well. But I love connecting with people. So please, like, I try to respond to all DMs and all that. So I love just like sharing, like hearing from other people, their stories. So absolutely. Thank you so much. It was just a ton of fun. I really appreciate you having me on. And it was nice to share my story and have you listen.
Thank you, Shilpa.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.